This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Well, welcome, Shaw, and
thank you
so much for joining us this evening. We're really excited to have you here to share your insights on wildlife filmmaking and the process of making this film that we just watched, that really captures the diversity and beauty of our local coastline. So the film has been wildly successful, from what I understand. It's been in 7 film festivals, winning multiple awards, and had 27 local screenings. So I was wondering if you anticipated this kind of reception when you first released the film.
Well, before I answer that, I just want to thank everybody for coming out tonight. This is amazing. So just please give yourself a round of applause. You know, it's hard to say. We didn't really know how the film was going to be. We knew there was going to be at least some people would like it. But we made the film over the course of 5 years we were filming. And along the way, it was too much to think of what it would be like after the film was made. So we just kept filming. But right at the end, when we were in the editing room, we knew, all right, we got something good here. And at the Santa Barbara Film Festival last year, we had our premiere, and we had 3 sold-out shows, including the Libero, and people were lined up all the way to State Street. And sitting in the rain, and people started getting angry, and then the police showed up. I have a photo of these people arguing. And so that was really exciting. And ever since then, we've had I haven't really been a part of it. Just dozens of people from the community are stepping up and saying, "I want to host your film," and I don't really know anything about it. And I show up, and then there's 100 people, and I'm like, "Wow, this is amazing!" So we could not be happier with the success. The success is really for the Gaviota Coast and the awareness, but for the crew who worked on it so hard for so long, it just really feels amazing to see this kind of response.
Yeah, that's great. So what about the film, or maybe it's our community? I'm just kind of wondering what your thoughts are on why it's been so successful and well-received.
Well, a number of reasons. I think because there's no people in it, number one. And we really went out of our way to leave out roads and buildings and any kind of trace of mankind, mostly because when you watch it, it's more of an intimate experience. You're not being told by people or experts what to think. The narration guides you through the film, but it's the closest thing you could have to really seeing the wildlife yourself. So that was one of our goals, is we want to inspire people to go out into the Gaviota Coast, and if you're lucky, you could see any of these images that we showed in the film. On the other hand, I think that people are ready for this film. I think people, they want to protect the environment. This is not a question anymore. We have a coastline here that is world-renowned. It's a biodiversity hotspot. And the locals who live here, they want to protect that. That's why we moved here. So those are the 2 reasons, I think.
Yeah, it's a really incredible place. I know I've spent time in the Gaviota Coast and just really fallen in love with it. And this film takes you there, you know, in a way that I've never been before. So I, you know, just really appreciate that a lot. And this is your first wildlife film, is that correct?
It is.
So what inspired you to get into wildlife filmmaking, and why did you choose to make a film about the Gaviota Coast?
Well, the Gaviota Coast inspired me, actually. I had worked on several films before this on a number of different issues, all documentary. And it wasn't till about 2007 I went to Earth Day, and I was really wanting to get involved, but I didn't really know when or who to talk to. And there was the Gaviota Coast Conservancy was tabling at Earth Day, and I went up there and I started talking to them, and I was really shocked to find out that I had lived in Santa Barbara for 7 years, and I didn't know I lived next to a threatened biodiversity hotspot. I had been really distracted by all the other places around the world that are being destroyed. And when I found out that I lived here and I could get involved personally, it really turned around my outlook of how much power I have as one person. And building relationships with them, and just became a basic volunteer at first. And then I said, this is such an incredible place. I think I'm the right person to make a movie. Yeah, so it's really the coastline and really the Gaviota Coast Conservancy. The members there, they're an amazing group. I mean, they're family, they're friends. They've spent decades of their life protecting this place. And when you get in with them, they really show you something that you would never see otherwise. So I want to thank them for that.
So when you have this this idea or this inspiration, how do you take that and make it into a film? What does that process look like?
Well, that's probably the most difficult thing, I think, whether you're starting a business or choosing a degree that you want to pursue, that first step. It's so funny because the film we saw tonight is nothing like what we thought it was going to be at first. It has morphed and changed, and through all these different circumstances, we've changed, and the message we wanted to tell changed. So I wouldn't say it's 100% critical that you exactly know what you're going to do, but that's why we just went out and started filming. And as we came back on different adventures, we learned different things, and eventually the puzzle kind of completed itself. And that's kind of what we ended up here. So this is not the normal project, I'd say. There was never a straight line.
And I'm sure you had support from, you know, people alongside of you helping to make this project happen. So who were those people, and what were their roles in the filmmaking?
Well, my family, first and foremost, has supported every crazy idea I've ever had, and this one was at the top of that list. My friends, countless times, would drive me out to the Gaviota Coast, drop me off, pick me up, help me with a fundraising event, all that. But really, the UC Coastal Fund, this would have never happened without UCSB or the UC Coastal Fund. So I just want everybody here to know that it was the students and the members of the school who funded this project from the very beginning. I came to them with a very loosely drawn idea, and they got behind it 100%. And that was the springboard that launched the entire project. And then once we had all this equipment, there was no turning back. There was no excuses anymore. And once that ball or that snowball started going downhill, we had the Fund for Santa Barbara, we had the Gildea Foundation, Patagonia stepped in, we were sponsored by Leatherman and Jan Mountaineering, and it just started to take effect. And and then many years went by, and then no one heard from us. and I think most people assumed that the project was dead, but it wasn't. So it's been family, friends, nonprofit organizations, foundations. I've had so much support along the way that there is no way I could have ever done this alone. So I think this is a community project all the way.
Yeah. And who was right there with you during the filmmaking process, like the producing and the writing and backpacking, you know, 15 miles to get some of those shots?
Well, the project took so many years that some people came and went and provided amazing services, but there was a couple people who were there from the very beginning, and one of them was Tamlorn Chase, who was my cousin, divorced, and he was a professional guide, expert kayaker, surfer, waterman, everything. I was filming alone for about a year and a half, and he moved back to Santa Barbara, and as soon as he moved back, we started going out together, and all of a sudden the trip started doubling in size and everything. And very quickly I said, hey man, you need to start shooting with a camera. I just taught him the basics, and he picked it up so fast that somewhere around half of this film was shot by him. And he's been throughout the whole process, all the way through editing, everything. Another person, Jesse Davidson, who came on, I don't know, 4 years ago, who was a pilot. And all the really high-altitude aerial footage in the film, she was there flying the plane, and I was shooting out the window. And she's been there through the entire thing We actually ended up getting married. And she's been a producer. She built our website. She's done so much correspondence for the screenings. And so if the two of you could stand up for me, they're right here. If we could give them a round of applause, that'd really... Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you both for your contributions. So can you tell us a little bit more about your decision to leave people out of this film and roads and everything, like you've said?
Well, it was a lot easier for us in the sense that we didn't have everybody putting in their 2 cents. Sometimes you really got to put your blinders on when you're doing a project like this because, I think we've all had a great idea for a movie, right? So when someone's actually making one, you just want to chime in with your personal dream. But at the same time, I think what really sparked my interest in wanting to make a wildlife film was watching Planet Earth. And I had never seen anything like that. And even being a photographer for many, many years, it was shocking how amazing it was. And I think the reason why I've watched Planet Earth so many times is because there isn't any people in there. And you can really tune out and really focus on the wildlife and be a part of that. That was really Planet Earth, and that really inspired us through the whole process. We were just trying to mimic it and make a low-budget Planet Earth. That's what we just kept on saying, it's low-budget, as we're like building our own equipment in the backyard and we made so much stuff, and we had a lot of support, but we also got through this whole project on just a skin and bone skeleton budget. But for ultimately, we wanted to make a film that was timeless. We wanted to leave all the architecture. We wanted to leave any dates or places out of it. We wanted to make a film also that could speak to a 5-year-old and a 90-year-old. And I think we did that. We've had 26 screenings, and we've gone from elementary schools to senior living facilities, and it's amazing. So that's I think that was because we left all the talking heads out. I think everyone here is a little overabsorbed with talking heads. I am. So,
yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned that because the first time I saw this film was actually at a screening with Santa Barbara Surf Rider, and when I came away, that was my thought. It was like, wow, that's what I was telling people. It's like Planet Earth, but you know, for our local coastline, that's really what it feels like. And I think one of the reasons it really resonated with me personally. Is that this is a place that I love and explore and have spent time in, but the film allows you to see it in a totally different light because of these shots that you're able to get, like from the plane and underwater. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about how you were able to achieve some of that really amazing footage that you got.
Well, it didn't come easy in the sense of the trial and error behind this movie. It's like 10 to 1. I mean, what we actually came back with, it took so much trial and error. I wish we would have documented it, but we had so many kooky ideas that we were convinced were going to work. We were going to get the mountain lion by doing this, and it totally bombed. I'm in the solar industry. A lot of the things we built were from solar racking. So we had all this like aircraft aluminum things bolted together in like for steady cams, underwater steady cams, aerial steady cams. We built all these crazy things. Some of them worked great. Other ones were really heavy and ended up going to the dump. But mostly it was a team, mostly. We had an aerial cinematographer from Hollywood that made about 12 trips up for free. And he did all the kind of lower altitude aerial footage. We had Jesse flying the plane. We had Tam as a second shooter. We had a gentleman named Paul Matthew, who was an absolute expert post-production supervisor. Playback Recording Studios did the sound engineering. So when you combine all these skills and talents, that's what makes the final product. As far as like us in the field, we just did so many trips. Tam and I did, that We eventually came back with what we were looking for. Most of the time, we did not come back with what we thought we were going afterwards, but we came back with a very important piece of the puzzle that would later on connect to some other footage. But I can't say that there was a lot of we plan for this and we get this and then we just keep going. It wasn't like that. It was very sporadic.
So from these adventures that you took out in the field, did you face anything really dangerous? Were you in any like life-threatening situations? It looks like you could have been based on that wildfire footage. You know, that was pretty incredible.
Well, honestly, I always thought, I was like, my big fears were like getting sprayed by a skunk, getting shot by some guy with a gun, because who knows why. Getting messed with by surfers who didn't know what I was up to. No, but we did a lot of trips where anytime you're 15 miles or 12 hours from your car or anything like that, like a snake bite or a broken ankle or some rock sliding off a hillside or anything like that can really put things can get dangerous pretty quickly. But, you know, the fire footage was certainly dangerous only because I don't really know how fire behaves. And so I was trying to get as close as I could, but still want to go home. When we were filming in the canyons, and all you see is gushing waterfalls, it's really intimidating climbing up those canyons, as we can see with the mudslide. We were filming in that riparian forest in the Arroyo Hondo Preserve, and we climbed up that canyon after 3 days of rainfall because we wanted to just be gushing. So there's certain times, you know, landslides like that. Tam would go out scuba diving by himself and just come back with footage. He would go backpacking by himself and come back with stuff. So we did a lot of solo stuff, too, that was intimidating. I had several water failure situations where I broke the valve on my Camelback, and now I'm 12 miles with zero water. And just little stuff like that catches up with you. But nothing bad ever happened.
Yeah, well, you're here.
Yeah.
You've made it. Tam's made it. Jesse's mm-hmm. made it.
Yeah, of course, when we were up in the plane, too. I mean, when Jesse and I first went up, I wasn't sure quite how good of a pilot you were. So that was intimidating.
Yeah, well, looks like she proved you wrong, though.
She did, yeah.
Yeah. So besides, I guess, the challenges of, you know, being in wildfire conditions and heavy rainfall, like, were there any other challenges that you faced in the filmmaking process?
I would say just the fickle nature of the Gaviota Coast and the kind of the drought that's been occurring for the last 5 years, and we would miss something and then it wouldn't happen for a year. And we would have to kind of just know that we, you know, we missed the elephant seals at Point Conception. They're not going to be back for another year. The snowfall was incredibly, wasn't it? It's actually kind of icing, but that was incredibly hard to document. We went up to the top of Santinez Peak probably a dozen times before it actually froze. And so we're sitting there waiting, and it's like the temperature's 34 degrees, 34 degrees. And then it's like, so things like that. The wildfire was completely unpredictable, but the funny thing is the flower bloom that we had from the burn was from a totally different fire that happened 5 years before. And so we would then piece them together. And that's where I was saying that kind of the puzzle started to fill in. Thinking about any other challenges that were... Our packs were so heavy. I think in at least 100 pounds... because we have to pack all of our own water and then pro camera gear and then all your own personal camping gear. You know, so sometimes we'd go out for 3 or 4 days and we'd carry all of our own water, if you can believe that. And the good thing is your pack gets lighter as you go, but that was, I think, we didn't have any equipment failure, which was amazing. So the same camera went all the way through the whole film. So that was great.
Knock on wood, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's still working. So you mentioned the challenge of getting animals, and I'm wondering if there was any particular animals that eluded you during the filming process that you had your heart set on, and what you had to do to wait or mm-hmm. to persist to get those shots that you really wanted.
Well, we only have like one shot of it, but the white-tailed kite is insanely hard to get close to. And we weren't really able to. I had that one shot. They are unbelievably aware of you in their area. The night vision section took a long time. We had access to the Arroyo Hondo Preserve, and we had about 12 night vision cameras set up in different locations for a year. And every 2 or 3 weeks, we'd go out there and check them. And we had it going for 3 or 4 months, and we're like, oh, fox, great. Coyote, great. Skunk, okay. Wood rat, all right. And then about four or five months into it, there's this little preview screen on the back of the camera, and we see a mountain lion in it, and we're just like, oh, yeah. And when we put it up on the laptop, I'm probably the one that set the camera wrong. It was set on still mode, and it was just a blurry shot of a tail, and that was heartbreaking. But 2 weeks later, we got the cat, and then for about 2 weeks, the cat was in the canyon kind of walking around and going on patrol. And one day, when we first went out there, we saw this huge pile of mountain lions scat there on the ground, and we were like, yes, because we're always tracking these animals. We're trying to find some sort of sign. And when there's no rain, there's no footprints, you don't have much to go off of. So we found this pile of mountain lion scat, and then the camera started going off, and we're like, okay, we got it. And then one day we go out to check the cameras, and there's a huge pile of bear scat right next to the mountain lion scat. And it was like a turf war. And we never saw the mountain lion again, but that's when the bear came in. And so they would kind of like work their, do their little tours and keep moving. Trying to think of what else was a really hard animal. Believe it or not, we didn't see too many rattlesnakes. That was a tough one to get.
And how did you get so close to the rattlesnake in the footage?
Well, we had pretty big lenses for a lot of it. And then other stuff, like, oh, you know what's dangerous? The beehive. Because I was like, oh, I found this beehive in this oak tree. And I got so close. I mean, I was like right where your foot is. And I'm just thinking like, I'm going to get stung. So that was definitely close. But no, we just, a lot of stuff, we were in game tents, so we were super camouflaged. Mm-hmm. And even with a long lens, in camouflage, in a game tent, like for 8 hours, you might get a close shot, but it's really just persistence. And once in a great while, they come close enough to you without them sensing you. And then other times, it's so weird, they don't mind. Like when we're, the shot of in Naples, when all those birds are resting on that little stone island, because we were in a kayak, they just weren't intimidated of us. We just floated right up next to this pack or a flock of birds that normally would have just... So they all have different trigger mechanisms of fear.
Well, I bet you learned a lot, yeah. In this process. And I can only imagine how long and like how much patience, it would really take to understand where these animals are, where their habitat is and what their, seasons, I guess, are also.
Yeah.
So how long did it actually take you to film this movie?
5 years.
Wow.
And going really hard for 5 years. But that was nights and weekends and holidays. I mean, we had jobs, so we were never full-time filmmakers. That definitely stretched things out. But sometimes I just don't even think that I could have made it faster even if I was full-time, because some of these moments are just, some of these are just once for me. They're just so rare. Some things I've never seen again. So a lot of it's just total, you just have to go, and then these gems just drop. But then we had a year of pre-production and a year of post-production, so all in all, 7 years.
7 years.
Yeah, and then this whole last year of screenings, probably 8 years.
So during that time when you're having to like go back to get more shots, in the same locations, I mean, do you get like frustrated? Were there times where you kind of wanted to give up on this project? And what really drove you to completion?
Well, we had to complete because otherwise I would have thrown my whole life away for 5 years. but no, it would get extremely frustrating because you're not only that, you're spending a lot of money, you know, and it's like your precious weekend and just resources are very slim. What would happen was is sometimes weeks would go by and we just weren't getting what we were going out for, and then something amazing would happen, and it would just it would boost your spirits, it would boost your motivation. It's tough, but you know, we enjoy this so much. I enjoyed when you go out wildlife filmmaking. I mean, there's no bad days really. You're going out into nature. A lot of times people really marvel, and it is amazing that we worked on this for so long, but we love going outdoors. We love climbing mountains. We love diving. We love doing all these activities. Bringing a camera along, documenting it was just, it certainly pushed us to go places we probably wouldn't have gone because we had to tell a certain part of the story. But otherwise, I think we would have been doing that anyway. So that's why this has been such a joy for me. I mean, this has not been like a horrible experience by any means. There's not much pain or anything like that. Not much suffering.
And what do you think the most rewarding part of this experience has been for you personally?
Well, watching all these people show up for the movie, it's really incredible. I feel like the community has a tool now that they really needed to really understand how precious this place is, and words and even photographs just weren't good enough. And I'm really hoping that the community I think everybody in Santa Barbara should watch this film. I think every child in every school should watch this film. I think every student at UCSB should have to watch it as they be in orientation to start off their whole experience here to change their perspective and to give them a chance to get involved. Because like I said, for myself, I was here for 7 years and I had no idea what the Gaviota Coast was. It just wasn't real. And so for me, being able to just watch people in 45 minutes take in what took myself and my crew 6 years to make is, it's amazing. Yeah.
It's great. You have a lot of support, obviously.
Thank you.
And Gaviota Coast has a lot of support. And, you know, the film is really stressing the importance of preserving this land for wildlife and for this unique, very biodiverse area that we basically get to call home or our backyard. I'm wondering if you could tell us about some of the successes on the Gaviota Coast in terms of preserving this land.
Well, I'm sure everybody has heard about the Bixby Ranch. That, I tell you what, when you read stories like that, dreams do come true. And people on the Gaviota Coast, I think the one thing that kind of makes naysayers, they say, oh, well, you know, X amount of millions of dollars to buy this land, and it seems larger than life. It doesn't seem like it's achievable, but it's not true. And we have dozens of organizations in Santa Barbara that constantly fight to protect this coastline. And the Bixby Ranch was a little crown jewel achievement for all of us. I hope, is going to be the stepping stone to the next piece of land, and the next piece of land, and the next piece of land. Because Santa Barbara has a great record for protecting amazing places like the Wilcox property, you know, the Butterfly Preserve. I mean, we do this when we have to. Some of the land out there is very expensive, but where there's a will, there's a way. And I think that starting off with getting people to fall in love with the Gaviota Coast, to get an emotional connection to the wildlife and the landscape, is the first step. Then the next step is you all have to go out there and see it for yourself. And then after that, we got to influence our local politicians and leaders to create the political will and put the pressure on the right people and buy this land and protect it permanently. So, I mean, that's what we have to do, and we're going to do it. I don't ever think we're not going to do it.
That's great. And so in terms of, I guess, going back, tying this story of Gaviota Coast and the filmmaking, you know, what is your process, and how do you implement that storytelling from these ideas onto a film that's digestible and interesting for people?
That's a tough one. You know, this is just my experience, really. I mean, or our experience. I mean, this is just the story I wanted to tell. This is what I experienced when I was out on the coast, and I knew if I could share that, that it was powerful. I think everybody's going to have a different experience out there depending on what your motivations are. But with this one, I wanted to go back to the kind of the beginning, the first story of the wildlife and the seasons and all that stuff. So that's where I was coming from. I did not want to get caught up in all the noise that we have today, you know?
Yeah. So what was the largest sacrifice that you made to complete this project?
I would say time away from my family. Time away from my family, time away from my friends, saying no to birthday parties, saying no to everything that I really wanted to be at. And luckily for me, my family and friends really understood that I wasn't just blowing them off, and they knew I was doing something awesome. They weren't quite sure when it would be done, but they did that. But what I've experienced in this last year after not working on the film is just a lot more time with my friends and family. It's really the time involved that takes away.
Yeah. Well, it's for a great cause, I think. So you can't bring that time back, but I'm sure, you know, your friends and family see the importance of the work that you did and really value it. So just one last question to finish it off here. I'm wondering if you can tell us, you know, here we're at UCSB. This is basically the beginning of the Gaviota Coast, right? It's just right here off of our own campus. So it's our backyard, you know, it's our home. It's the place that we live and recreate and where our actions, you know, really affect this area. So what do you think that students and people in this community can do to support the wildlife protection of the Gaviota Coast?
Well, I think a great start is to become a member of the Gaviota Coast Conservancy. It's really, the most fantastic organization. They are the watchdog of the entire Gaviota Coast. They have amazing news bulletins that keep you totally up to date on all the new threats that are coming through. I think sharing this film, sharing your experience watching this film is really amazing, because we haven't released the film on the internet because it's so much more powerful to have screenings where you actually meet people and you see that it's not just by myself watching a movie in the dark. It's you're seeing that there's a huge community here that really is already fighting for this. It's a lot of fun to be involved with the Gaviota Coast, because you do see successes like the Bixby Ranch, and you feel a part of that. And that's kind of that's a legacy that you can leave behind. This is the go-to one, though, but picking up trash on the beach. Last weekend, Jesse and Tam and I went to Point Conception, and Jesse literally carried back so much trash she injured her knee. and I think that was so amazing. And all these people were like celebrating her as she was coming back. They were like, oh my gosh, look how much trash that woman's carrying. But really, the wildlife, the birds, they eat that stuff. And we find dead birds with just lighters and stuff coming out of their bellies. And so for me, one of the most immediate things you can do is just go do a trash cleanup. It feels so good. And I tell you what, I've never not had someone thank me for it. So that's a huge thing. And then I guess creativity. A lot of the best ideas are the ones that haven't been thought of or done. And so no one really asked me to make this film. I just felt that was the skills I could contribute to the Gaviota Coast. you don't have to be a biologist, you don't have to be a ranger or someone who's an expert on these sort of things. There are such a diverse group of people who all bring such amazing different skills. I can just honestly say in these 26 screenings, I've had almost zero input. And so all these other people have stepped in and did what they could, and it's turned out to be such an amazing last year. So, but number one, join the Gaviota Coast Conservancy.
Yeah. Great. Well, thanks again for joining us this evening.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.